This episode of Section D was first broadcast on the 24th of March 2015 on Monocle 24. Hello and a very warm welcome to Section D, the programme we devote to the world of design each week here on Monocle 24. I'm your host, Tom Morris, with a global whip round of a show coming up this week. We hear from the new president of Finland's most loved design brand, Marimekko.
Marimekko remains true to our original design DNA, with the prints, colours, joyful attitude to life at the heart and soul.
We'll be hitting the beach in Rio, where one designer is managing to make her bikinis stand out in a land famed for its swimwear.
One of the bikinis, make your, we call bonbon here, like two little apples.
And we go to Germany to find out what makes for an optimal bathroom experience.
For me, the bathroom is the place where architecture, industrial design, lifestyle, naked bodies, they meet each other. In that place, you just add water, and then it's like a bomb.
All that and much more here on Section D, the show dedicated to design from around the world here on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to Section D with me, Tom Morris. Now to start the show, we're going to hear from the Baselworld Watch Fair. The horological industry's most important annual rendezvous opened last Thursday. And this year's event was a particularly interesting one for two reasons. One was the introduction of Apple into the market, and also hot on the heels of the Swiss franc zooming up in value 40% earlier this year. To get the lowdown on how these two developments have hit the watch industry in Switzerland, not to mention general highlights at Baselworld, I caught up with Joachim Ziegler, CEO of Zurich timepiece retailer Les Ambassadeurs at the Messe in Basel.
So I know you're incredibly au fait with Baselworld. What do you reckon the mood's been like this year, 2 days in?
I found it surprisingly upbeat, considering the fact that we just had the famous 15th of January. Surprised.
Have you noticed, has that had any knock-on effect in here? Are people sort of carrying on regardless?
No. I mean, everyone, you can tell people put more thoughts into what they're buying, put more thoughts in what they're offering. The offering has probably become more accessible. So I think we see a lot of positive effects, actually, for the average consumer.
That's a very quick reaction.
True, but we're in the Swiss watch industry, and Swiss always been quick.
So tell us some of your favourite things so far. I know we're only 2 days in. I know you're here for a while seeing everything, but talk us some of your favourite brands to start with.
Yeah, you're right. I only had 2 days, so I haven't seen anything. So sorry for all the things I missed so far. I'd say the most exciting things that I've seen so far is the Tradition chronograph from Breguet, a really fantastic piece that they invented there, based on very old innovations, but with a modern and quite cool twist. Another thing that I noticed was the Ulysse Nardin, the constant escapement they did with the Flying Tourbillon, something they just launched this year. We saw a little prevision last year and was very excited, and now they seem to be ready to produce it on a larger scale. What else? Well, there's plenty of very, very exciting things. I'd say the second mort, I don't know how you say that in English, kind of the dead second from Jacques Etrault. On one hand, very traditional, on the other hand, very modern and very sleek looking, fine, kind of retro looking watch.
Yeah. You mentioned then that brands have reacted to what's happened in the Swiss economy with being a bit more accessible. Any other trends? Is that the major trend?
Well, one thing that I find surprising is that the most watches have more than 18 hours power reserve, actually. So I would say that is a major trend of the Swiss watch industry, that they all have more than 18 hours power reserve.
And let's talk, I mean, the big other major news in the horological industry over the past, well, since the last Baselworld, was Apple's entry into the market. Have you seen any knock-on effects of that? There was the news yesterday about Tag Heuer being the first to sort of venture into the market. Do you think a lot more will follow? How do you think that's kind of had an impact on the industry?
I mean, that's what I was hitting on with the 18 hours power reserve. So in the end, I think the Swiss watch industry shouldn't be too much concerned about what Apple is doing, but much more concentrating on what they're good in. At the same time, yes, it is very exciting to see Tag Heuer moving into this direction, even though we've just seen announcements so far. I've seen a prototype of Breitling, very exciting, because they put the watch in the center of the intention and made the smartphone kind of being the follower of the watch. Wow. So let's see where the concept is going. But yeah, Tag Heuer, I'm sure they have a pretty good move there that they're doing.
Will you be stocking the Apple Watch?
No.
That was me talking to Joachim Ziegler, CEO of Zurich timepiece retailer Les Ambassadeurs at the 2015 Basel World Watch Fair, which took place last week. Check out our highlights from the fair in the May issue of Monocle. And now from the watches of Switzerland to the bathrooms of Germany. Yes, that's right. There's a fair dedicated to bathroom design, and it's held every 2 years at Frankfurt's enormous Messe. On the 14th to the 18th of March, the International Sanitation and Heating Fair, or ISH, transformed the exhibition centre in Frankfurt into the world's largest showcase of bathroom fittings and furniture, heating and air conditioning technologies, and renewable energy. For Section D, Marie-Sophie Schwarzer spent 2 days whizzing around the trade fair, meeting the CEOs and designers behind the latest trends and innovations in bathroom design.
For over half a century, experts and visitors from around the globe have flocked to Frankfurt's biennial ISH, or ISH, the world's biggest fair for bathroom design, renewable energies, heating and air conditioning technologies. This March, 2,465 exhibitors from 59 countries showcased their latest products across 10 expansive halls. We caught up with some of the bathroom giants to learn more about the newest taps, tubs and toilets. Our first stop is Zucchetti Kos. Celebrated architect and designer Roberto Palomba reveals what's exciting about designing for the Italian brand that has been shaking up bathroom design for decades.
For me, the bathroom is the place where architecture, industrial design, lifestyle, emotion, naked bodies, and whatever, they meet each other. In that place, you just add water, and then it's like a bomb. It's wellness bomb, it's a fashion, it's whatever. And you can be naked with your listening to your music and dancing, not naked, like that under the shower, and you can be happy the same. So that's what I'm looking for, try to create this kind of emotion. Many years ago when I started, the bathroom was just a place for functions. It was a secret place. There was a door, there was the plumber's kingdom, no architect was allowed, there was the toilet, the basin, the furniture, there was everything. So before me, a couple of designers tried to do that, but it was not changing the rules. They was just changing the shape. And then I was the first changing the rules.
Our second stop is the German sanitary fitting specialist Grohe, where we meet Senior Vice President of Design Paul Flowers.
The bathroom has transformed from a rational space for cleaning and grooming into an emotional space, well-being, a spa, all those areas. So, of course, that with it comes lots of opportunities. So we've introduced new types of aesthetics, new technologies with digital, new materials and finishes. We're seeing a big trend in the bathroom and the bedroom opening up. The bathroom, as it opens up, is becoming a real statement, and consumers are investing more than ever in the bathroom, and it's meaning that they're really looking for a design which encapsulates their styles and tastes.
But it's not only about aesthetics, it's also about technology and sustainability, as specification and projects manager Floyd Case of Japanese company Toto tells us.
The green consideration is paramount with Toto. The products that we have, the toilets, will flush using less water in many cases than many conventional WCs and more effectively. So you're flushing at maybe 4.5 litres or 3 litres instead of the 6 litres that is standard. So the latest generation of washlets, and if you're not familiar with washlets, they are the electronic bidet seats that after you've been to the toilet, they'll wash you, dry you, massage you even in some cases. So after it's washed you, they will self-clean the ceramic and themselves using this e-water technology, which is quite terrific.
Dornbracht's managing director, Andreas Dornbracht, outlines what other trends were visible at ISH.
I certainly see that there is more interest from the market in different finishes. The chrome-plated finish has become a standard. It is a contemporary look. It's a shiny metal look. It's in combination with other material, even maybe neutral. But we do see that designers and architects are looking for other finishes. That's one trend. The second trend is certainly digitalization of certain functions. So it's not about digital aesthetics, I think. So we have really to deliver added values, like, for example, our automatic bath filling program, which can be started from the iPad, the iPhone, any smartphone, and then the bathtub will give a signal when it's full. So one can do something else in the meantime. So these are applications which are driven by additional convenience, additional comfort, additional pleasure. And that's, I would say, is a very strong trend over the next years.
Philip Groh, head of Exor, a subset of family-run company Hansgrohe, whose Exorstack V-Faucet was a highlight at the fair, shares his closing thoughts with us.
The bathroom's importance is rising because this me space, this wellness space, is getting more and more important because our lifestyles become more and more hectic, more and more scheduled and planned. We have to be extremely efficient. We live more and more in cities and we go away from nature. And if you put all this together and the digitalization, but at the end we are all animals, still a big part of us is an animal. We need this nature touch. We need some time for us, for ourselves. And this is why the bathroom has a rising importance in the past 20 years, moving away from hygienic to well-being. And it will be like that in the next 20 years because the life is speeding up every day and we don't see it slow down.
That was Monocle's Marie-Sophie Schwarzer there with that report from the ISH International Bathroom Design Fair in Frankfurt. Now, since its creation in 1951, Marimekko's original printed fabrics and bold colours have given the company a strong and unique identity. The Finnish design company's products, which includes clothing, accessories and home decor items, are sold in around 40 countries. Marimekko recently announced that a new president will be taking over the company. 33-year-old Tiina Alahuhta-Kasko is currently the chief operating officer, but will begin her new role in April. Monocle's Mark Bosworth went to meet her at Marimekko's headquarters in Helsinki.
Being a Finn, I think all of us Finns have some sort of a relationship with Marimekko. So mine started when I was probably 3 years old. My grandmother was and still is a huge Marimekko fan. When I was younger, she wouldn't wear anything else but Marimekko. So I guess I was marinated quite well from the youth already. But for me, what attracted me to Marimekko, obviously, already when I was a teenager, I got extremely excited and interested about the design and fashion world, especially from a self-expressive point of view, and started following the industry very much. And when I started my studies, I studied economics in a business school. I started kind of the process of defining my ideal career path, and having that special relationship with Marimekko and, you know, having found the fondness for our brand quite early on, it felt like a natural choice. I had always been very inspired by the strong design language and design philosophy of Marimekko, as well as the strong visionary women, the founder as well as the designers behind the story. So it felt like a brand and a company that I personally really believe in, both from a philosophical as well as from a value and product point of view. So it was kind of my dream job already then.
Now, on my way to interviewing you here at Marimekko headquarters today, it was very clear to see coming through the factory shop the number of Japanese visitors here. It's quite incredible. Mm-hmm. I mean, where does Marimekko currently stand globally?
So within the last years, I would say especially 3 to 5 years, we've been really strengthening our international foothold. And I think it says quite a lot that actually within the last about 3 years, the number of Marimekko stores has increased by 60% in the world. The number of our company-owned stores has doubled. And currently our main markets are, in addition to Northern Europe, also North America and the Asia-Pacific region. And the biggest growth we've seen in the Asia-Pacific region, so not surprisingly to your observation. So there are around 46 Marimekko stores in that market area, with the biggest market there being Japan with nearly 30 stores. And I mean, in Japan, we have a lot of very loyal fans already. And what I find very inspiring that I can, when I travel there, I already see Marimekko quite a lot in the streets, you know, worn by people. So this is also the kind of the journey that we're going to be now continuing onward. So we feel that Marimekko design speaks a universal language, and we can see that our design awakes emotions in people across different cultures. And we feel that there is a place for us out there, even in a stronger scale in the international market. So we're continuing on that path.
And Marimekko's new autumn-winter collection mm-hmm. is going to be launched in Tokyo yes. in a couple of weeks, March the 19th. And that's really showcasing the work of the new creative director, Anna Turnell.
Yes. So autumn-winter collection 2015, that is the first collection where you can already start seeing a little bit of the, let's say, new direction in our ready-to-wear collections that has been taken onwards by our new creative director, Anna Turnell. Her first real collections will be spring-summer 2016. But we're very excited about the upcoming preview in Tokyo, and it's no surprise why we decided to showcase on a global level our new collection in Tokyo, being in the kind of surrounded by a lot of Marimekko friends. It's our second biggest market in the world, actually, Japan at the moment.
So what signs are there in the new designs mm-hmm. of this new direction?
Yeah, I think Anna, our creative director, has kind of said it herself as well. So obviously, you know, Marimekko remains true to our original design DNA, stemming from our art of printmaking and the prints, colors, joyful attitude to life at the heart and soul. But basically what we're going to do is updating a little bit of our silhouettes, updating our materials, paying a little bit more attention to detail. And overall, the collection has been built from a more holistic, wholesome point of view, so that our customers will be able to find even more pieces, looks to mix and match. So I think those are some of the key things. So basically, we're just updating our collection thinking so that it will hopefully speak even stronger to the Marimekko women of today.
That was Mark Bosworth in Helsinki speaking to the recently appointed president of Marimekko, Tiina Alahuhta-Kasko. This is Section D on Monocle 24 with me, Tom Morris. Now, it's not a well-kept secret that Brazil is home to some of the world's most itsy-bitsy, teeny-tiny bikinis. Even though some of the swimwear found on Brazil's beaches don't leave much to the imagination, the Latin American nation has produced some of the world's best-known swimwear designers, namely Leni Niemeyer. She started designing swimwear back in 1979 in her adopted city of Rio de Janeiro. And today, Leni Niemeyer's swimwear can be found at her 18 stores and 160 different retailers across Brazil. And they're worn by the likes of Naomi Campbell and Gisele. Monocle's Rio de Janeiro correspondent Sheena Rossiter visited the Leni Niemeyer headquarters to get a glimpse of what's behind her designs.
Leni Niemeyer, bom dia.
It's mid-morning on a scorching autumn day in Rio de Janeiro, and it's buzzing here at the Leni Niemeyer headquarters. What started as a one-woman side project operation in the late 70s has blossomed into a global brand that can be spotted on the catwalk at fashion weeks around the world. Leni, who is actually a landscape architect by trade and who is originally from Sao Paulo State, says that she started designing bikinis just by chance.
I never imagined to start working in fashion. Then I moved, when I got married, my first husband, I moved to Rio. This was in the 70s, 79, 80. We can find the bikinis, but they were really, really small. In Rio de Janeiro. In São Paulo, we are more conservative, so we are thinking to have a bikini a little bigger. Then my friends were asking me to bring some bikinis, but could be bigger. And I could not find, for sure. So I decided to do one. So I started doing bikinis.
And several decades later, here we are at the Leni Niemeyer headquarters and showroom, a three-floor operation in Rio's Botafogo neighborhood. With her perfectly coiffed blonde bob and stylish but simple all-black ensemble, 63-year-old Leni Niemeyer is a well-put-together businesswoman and designer as she goes through her first order of business for the day with her head of marketing, her upcoming winter collection. But downstairs from the showroom and main office is where the magic really happens.
Então, a gente tá no salão de produção.
Leni Niemeyer, marketing manager Flavia Leal, shows me around the brand's main factory. The needles on 120 industrial Singer sewing machines feverishly pierce small pieces of neutral colored lycra. This is the site of Leni Niemeyer's winter collection literally being pieced together. The Leni Niemeyer empire is growing at a steady rate. Leni has been opening a new store every year, and her designs can be found on every continent. All of Leni Niemeyer's beachwear is produced in Brazil, and the current output is 25,000 swimsuits per month.
Ah, eu tô fazendo maior da parte. Ah, fechando as laterais.
Alessandra Borges is one of the factory's seamstresses. She's worked here for the past year. Her sewing machine clacks away as she works on putting together the bottom half of a tanga-style bikini. Seamstresses like Alessandra have to work with detailed precision while sewing some of these garments, since there isn't a lot of material to grab on some of these Brazilian-designed bikinis.
Some cariocas, they use very, very, very small bikinis, but they don't use topless. And they don't care with this in Europe, an example. They want something more practical that you can dry more fast. But the biggest difference is the size of the bottom.
And as Leni wheels out her next season's collection, she has to slightly alter her designs that she sells within Brazil and those that she markets abroad. Leni describes her most popular swimwear design this season. Well, in Brazil at least.
You know, every year you have something that makes the fashion of the year. And one of the bikinis is you have like a seamstress on the back, on the middle, that make your, we call bonbon here, can make your back like two little apples. You know that this bonbon, it's very important for Brazilian. A little strap with an elastic that make in the beginning on the bottom that make you more sexy. But nothing too much, you know, less is more, always.
Yes, less certainly is more in Brazilian swimwear. But Leni says that these smaller bottom designs are now starting to catch on outside of Brazil, too.
Now they want to import a Brazilian style more than the size of bikini. And this is very nice for our market, our segment of beachwear. Some stores are already importing the Brazilian size.
If there's one thing that's clear from Leni Niemeyer's designs, it's that it doesn't matter how large or small a garment is. No matter what the size is, it's proof that design still matters. For Monaco, in Rio de Janeiro, I'm Sheena Rossiter.
This is Section D on Monocle 24 with me, Tom Morris. And finally, to a very traditional side of Japanese manufacturing. Maritomi is a company in the Fukui prefecture of Japan, famous for making lacquerware since 1970. Its owner, Mr. Masato Hayashi, was recently in London showcasing a rare limited edition collection of collaborations with Western designers such as Ettore Sottsass, Dieter Rams and Fritz Frenkler. Monocle's Guy Lutz headed down to South Kensington to get a glimpse of these unique pieces and to speak to Mr. Hayashi himself.
The Urushi history in Japan begins 1,500 years ago. The form of an object is made of wood. and people use the sap from urushi trees. The wood is a soft material. That's why the enforcement is required. And then afterwards, they make the item stronger and beautiful by applying a layer of lacquer.
And how long does this whole process take?
The easiest one takes 4 months, but the sophisticated ones take 12 months.
And what gives the urushi lacquer this distinctive black or red color? Is it applied or is it added after or is it from the tree itself?
The natural color of urushi is a tea brown color. And by adding the 2% of the iron powder, the color turns to black because of the chemical reaction. It becomes transparent black. The other pigment people add is red. These three colors, the tea brown color, black and red, are the three basic pigments of urushi.
Can you tell me a bit about the company itself, Marutomi, the history, how it was founded, and where does this passion from lacquer come from? Were you trying to revive something very ancient in Japan, or is it still very alive in Japan, this tradition?
Marutomi was founded in 1970. My father established the company. At that time, they produced products for daily use, home utilities. The lifestyle has been changed. It's been more westernized. That's why the actual times we use urushi lacquer for homeware are reduced.
And tell me a little bit about the collaboration of this Eastern meets West. So we have here amazing designers, Germans, Italians. Can you tell me a bit how this came about, this process of collaboration?
The quality of glass or metal products is comparable to that of urushi. And that's why I started introducing urushi to the world. I collected the best craftsmen in Japan to collaborate with the best worldwide designers.
And finally, could you take me through some of your favorites or some of these amazing designs and tell me what they are, what are their functions, and what makes them special?
My favorite product is a box by Ettore Sossas. He's now passed away. It's called Utsusemi. If you see this object, it's very beautiful as a sculpture, but it also has a function. Although you can't see it initially, you can open the box and put something in it. And then I asked him, what do you use it for? I liked Ettore Sotsas' answer. He said that this box is used for secret love letters.
That was Guy Lutz there speaking to Mr. Masato Hayashi of Japanese lacquerware company Marutomi. And that is all we have time for on this edition of Section D. Today's show is produced by David Pleasant and edited by Alex Funnell. You can contact the producer David at dmp@monocle.com if you'd like to feature on the show or if you have any comments or questions. Thank you very much for listening. Bye-bye.